This ROFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Greetings everyone. We're coming again from the Wairarapa, New Zealand. And this series of programs is called Beyond Panic. We're not panicking, are we, Anna-Marie?
No, we're not panicking. No, very calm.
Chamomile tea. Our two presenters are going to be Anna-Marie Kingsley and Margie Crawford. And we have presented before and we intend to rattle on. But we hope to bring not panic, but some calmness to this world. Now, Anna-Marie, when we talk about the world, what's going on generally, how are we dealing with things?
Well, there's a very interesting study that was done a while ago by some behavioural psychologists, and they said that generally in a population, because this relates back to COVID as well, you've got 80%, 10%, 10%. So 80% of people will just sit there and go, "Oh, what's happening?" Ooh, and they look around and they go, "Ooh, this is absolutely fascinating. I wonder. Well, maybe it's not as bad as we think it is," or whatever. And then you get another. So they just basically just sit there and react, and they just mumble along. And then you get another 10% of people who become completely and utterly hysterical, and they panic, and they really, really panic. Not in a good way. You know, they're screaming and they're running and they're buying toilet paper or whatever they're doing. And then you get the last 10%, and they're the planners. And they're the ones that are looking around them. And this relates not only to buying toilet paper, but also to being on a plane. If it's smoke suddenly fills the cabin, if it's in an earthquake, if it's in a ship that's going down, that last 10% of people, they're looking, and they're looking for a way out, and they're looking for a way to survive.
Good. So this is what our program is going to focus on, those survival people.
And how to get more of us into that 10% without the screaming and the panicking and without the just sitting there waiting for people to come and rescue us.
Yeah.
How to actually be a bit more resilient, how to be, and this is long term as well. This is also about the fuel crisis and money and earthquakes and cyclones and tsunamis, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Just planning a bit ahead so that you can be a little bit more prepared, so that you don't end up in the screaming 10% and you don't end up in the people that are just kind of sitting there waiting for somebody else to come and rescue them. The more we can be resilient, the more the emergency services can focus on people who really need help.
Yeah. So in these programs, we're going to also talk about ways of developing this attitude.
Yes.
Of being prepared without the panic in the background.
Mm.
Not bad to have a little bit of a wake-up call when something happens, but it doesn't mean to say run around, you know, like a chicken without a head. That's very graphic. Sorry, won't mention that.
It's the panic buying. The panic buying becomes very annoying to systems that are trying to keep up. It becomes annoying to supermarkets, to governments, to stock market exchanges, you know, all that sort of thing. Panic buying is not helpful to anybody. So if we can kind of reduce that by being a bit more prepared,
yes,
and being a bit more thoughtful about how we actually spend our resources, what we actually do, like with vegetable gardens or with an emergency kit or with a few more supplies in our pantry, then that helps a lot, you know.
Yes. Mm. And it's an attitude.
Yes.
You know, I keep thinking, I was with a group of, should I say, 70 pluses yesterday. And they all said, "Oh, we were born in the best of times." I thought, well, no, we were born post-war.
Yes.
And we were coming out of a Second World War when there were, scarcities. School feeding was much more popular than it is now. It was just a thing. We were all needed extra vitamins. I remember the cod liver oil. Blah, 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 blah,
did you have rationing in South Africa?
There was a certain amount because... not really, and it wasn't rationing. I think it was just the men had gone. You know, most of the men had gone up north. They were fighting.
Oh, okay.
And that was a huge thing. And so you start dealing with post-war trauma, fitting back in. The economy was still quite low. It had to grow. You know, there was a lot of post-war things. I mean, we had a woman who was sitting with us yesterday who grew up in Britain. They certainly had huge... They had, rationing right up until the 50s.
Yes. Yeah.
And we can talk about that, about self-reliance of a country besides your individual. How is a country prepared to survive drama, or some crises?
Or being shut off as well. I mean, in some ways, we're very lucky living in New Zealand. We're a long way away from the rest of the world. So, you know, big, huge volcanoes exploding in the North Hemisphere, or, you know, say, in a nuclear war or something, we're a lot more protected than the rest of the world.
Yes.
But we're also a very long way away in terms of supply chains.
Yeah.
We really are at the bottom of the world.
Yeah.
And ships can get to Australia, but it's a little bit harder getting to us.
Yes.
You know, so when supply chains start going down, we're kind of at the bottom of the rung there, and
yeah.
it costs a lot more to get things to New Zealand. So sometimes we need to think about how we, especially in terms of electrical things we don't make in New Zealand. We're pretty good
yes.
for food, pretty good
it's
for
our, yes, I mean, I was quite shocked when I got here to hear how many things used to be built here and have now gone offshore. But let's get back to sort of kind of listing the type of things that rock us as individuals, our living.
Yes.
So you've mentioned a few, should we mention the few sort of dramatic crises? So you'll go through...
Well, one that we're very, very at risk of in New Zealand is earthquakes.
Yes.
We've had some very major earthquakes in New Zealand that have killed people.
Hmm.
Christchurch, Kaikoura, that was a really big one as well. You know, there was the Napier one back in the 30s that killed a lot of people too. Earthquakes are probably the biggest risk in New Zealand.
Yeah.
We also have the occasional tsunami. I don't think we've had a really big one in New Zealand for quite a long time.
No, but we get affected by earthquakes at sea and things like that.
Yes.
That create tsunamis.
Yes, that's right. Yes,
yeah.
And we do have what's called the Hikarangi Trench, which is off the east coast of New Zealand. And if that goes, then that's quite a major tsunami risk for all of those east coast coastal settlements.
What about east coast gets everything? Because
they
get cyclones.
Yes, they do.
You know, as they
do.
Come off the Pacific, where does it hit first? It's Northland and the east coast.
Yes, yep, they get
the cyclones are another one of those.
Yeah.
These are all nature things, which is quite interesting.
Well, I think they get worse and worse with climate change. As the sea starts to heat up, then those cyclones, those big storms become more and more prevalent. Mm. We've had quite a few in the last year.
Well, the last few years, actually.
Yeah, and it's getting quite bad. So this, from cyclones, you get flooding, you get slips, and you get... Then on the other side, you also get droughts as well. Droughts are a major issue for a lot of people in New Zealand. Volcanoes. Auckland sitting on a whole heap of dormant volcanoes.
Yes.
I don't think anything's moving up there at the moment. Solar flares. Now, that's a really interesting one. Every now and then, there's a big kind of... Bit of a moment on Facebook where they're going, oh, the solar flares are coming.
Yeah.
And that's a bigger risk than we think it is. Not a lot we can actually do about that as a government, but there are ways that we can prepare for that. But it is a huge risk. It's a very rare risk.
Now, just explain to people, what is a solar flare?
It's when the sun puts out an enormous burst of sort of nuclear, because it is basically a giant nuclear reactor, an enormous burst of energy.
Mm.
And you can see it coming. And when we get the, what are those things? The auroras, whatever it is, I can't pronounce it very well, the coloured lights in the skies.
Yes.
We don't get the northern one, we get the southern lights.
Yeah.
When that happens, that's actually coming from a solar flare. So it's a massive amount of radiated ions coming out of the sun, and it passes through our atmosphere, and those ions
give that beautiful colour.
They give the beautiful
colour. So, all right, it's all really beautiful, but remember what it
indicates. That's in the minor version.
Yeah.
That's why they can tell you when it's coming, because they've watched what's coming out of the sun, so they can see these big flares, and they can tell you when it's going to hit and where, and because it takes a wee while to get to us. With a really, really big one of those, which one imagines will be rather beautiful on one's phone, it can also take out all your electronics.
Yes, that's what
it's
I was going to say. It has a huge impact. Now, I mean, we don't always talk about that, but we can mention a bit of how to mitigate against it.
Yes.
Notice I've used the word mitigate.
That's
I had
a big
to
word.
Throw it in.
Very big word there.
Yeah, I know. We've got to look up these things. But
me too.
All these things we're mentioning now are things of nature.
They're natural disasters.
They're natural disasters. We haven't mentioned things like war or...
Well, with war comes, as you know, currently the price of petrochemicals, the price of fuel is going up and up and up. Wages aren't. So you've got the cost of living increases as well. And there's lots of things we can do to mitigate that. And then we've also got, which is rather bizarre, AI. Fantastic use, you know, it's really, really good for lots and lots of different things. It surrounds us. There's every time you're talking to your fridge, telling you how to, you know, take a list with the supermarket and things and ordering things for you. That's AI. So there's a lot of things that are very, very useful about AI, but there's also, tragically, a bit of a downside because it starts to take jobs. And then so we end up with a lot of unemployment, people needing to be retrained and so
it's a different kind of industrial revolution. It's a technological
revolution. Governments will be managing that in a way, but then...
So we can almost divide things into the sudden, you know, the earthquake, the
natural disasters.
The natural disasters are things. The other ones tend to be political, technological, man-made in a sense.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. You know, which are sometimes more difficult than the crisis, the quick fix, I mean, the quick sudden...
Where are you putting climate change? Is it a sudden one or a slow one?
I think it's a slow one because it's slowly affecting a lot of things. You know, I think in a previous program we talked about how farming has been affected and, you know, various other things. So it is one that, and I think it does affect things like the tsunamis and the cyclones.
Probably not the tsunamis, but certainly the cyclones.
The cyclones, So it's almost like an underlying changes that are occurring.
Okay.
But now, we mentioned that earthquakes. Now, New Zealand is on a fault line. Mm. That was the one thing I do remember from my geography. Why I ever came here, I don't know. But
did you have earthquakes in South Africa?
Now, interesting enough, I was going to mention that in 1967, there was a very big earthquake because there is a small fault that runs, well, there's quite a few faults that run through Africa. And this was Cape Town, and it was sort of evening. And I remember I was at a friend's, pre-wedding sort of do with all the girls. And we all ran outside because it actually knocked down certain houses, especially the old houses that had been built with mud and stone in the country.
Yeah.
I think, I can't remember if many people were killed. And a few, you know, churches and things that were with granite or something cracked. So it had a major effect. So that was the only time I know of that we had an earthquake. They had earth tremors. Now, I grew up in Johannesburg, and we had quite a lot of earth tremors, but that was from mining.
Oh, yeah.
Because they disturbed the crust, you know.
Yes, yeah.
And a lot of houses had cracks in them. I mean, they were brick houses.
Was it more of a subsidence?
Yes, subsidence. Okay. Well, a whole house disappeared once.
Oh, dear.
With people in it.
Best not put a mine under your house, yeah.
Yeah, I know. So the way the rock, they had been, digging away, and the water sort of erodes, and then, gone.
Goodness.
So... We didn't have earthquakes as such, earth tremors.
Mm.
Now here in the Wairarapa, there was an earthquake in 1948, I think
it took out the clock tower. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. So and now I mean
it was quite big.
Mm. There have been some in the last few years here, because I do remember one in our old house. I react very quickly to anything. I've just got a nervous, not nervous disposition. I'm very reactive.
Which 10% are you, Margie?
I'm not the panic, but I'm a Cassandra. I've got to use that word.
Oh, right. Oh, yes.
Now, Cassandra was a Trojan princess, and she upset somebody or other, and they gave her the gift, Apollo gave her the gift of foresight. But with it, because she had upset Apollo, I think, he said, people will not believe you. So I'm the one that shouts, get out, get out, get out.
Right, okay.
First, and then no one believes me, which happened that night.
Oh,
I shouted, get out, get out, get out. It was quite a bad earthquake. And, of course, these houses are wooden.
Mm.
So it shook like mad. And I was out through two doors, front door, running down the driveway. I don't know where I was going to, barefoot on gravel, shouting at the husband. He took a little bit longer, and by which time the earth tremor had closed, I suppose earthquake, had closed the door. So he ran slap bang into a door.
Oh, no.
And I thought, yes, you don't listen quick enough.
No.
You know? So when Margaret shouts, get out, get out, which actually brings me back to that earthquake in South Africa, because there are aftershocks on earthquakes. And there was a group having dinner in one of the local restaurants, and I think he was a chap from somewhere where he'd lived where there'd been earthquakes, and he got up and shouted suddenly, get out, get out, get out. And everyone looked at him and said, too much drink. Sure enough, there was a very strong tremor. He could feel it, and animals can feel it.
Yes.
They can feel when there's something going on. So if you've got a dog that suddenly reacts or an animal reacts, you know, and I think sheep and them get disturbed when they know, well, mind you, sheep get disturbed by anything. you know, we're not going to go down that road about sheep, but there is a sensitivity. Some people have that sensitivity. They're aware that something has changed.
Mm.
So when there is a Cassandra in your group, just listen to them.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yes, well,
is that the story of Chicken Little as well? Remember Chicken Little and the sky is falling?
Yes, and no one would listen.
That's right, yeah.
Is the thing. So the warning signs of earthquakes and things can come a little bit before or not really?
You can hear a rumbling sometimes.
Okay.
It sounds like a train is coming and you're sitting there going, oh, I wonder what that is. And then it starts. Sometimes they come with a big bang, you know, and that's all. You just get a huge just bang noise, and that says it hits. Earthquakes are very. There's so many different types.
Yes,
that's why they're so hard for engineers to plan for a building, because they don't know what the earthquake's going to be. Fault lines can just appear out of nowhere. Christchurch always thought it was very safe. They'd never had an earthquake, and then all of a sudden they have a massive one.
So what is the liquefaction? Is from
liquefaction
that from
is when it shakes and it goes...
Okay, so that's a certain type of earthquake.
That is a certain type of earthquake. And what happens is that, you know, when you're making concrete, and if you put concrete into a bowl and you shake it and the water comes to the surface, that's what liquefaction does. So you've got water underground, you've got a water table, and depending on the type of soil that you're on, if you're kind of like on a sort of a clayey silt type soil, it doesn't usually happen with sand, but certainly a clay type silt, which will just sort of... As it shakes, it sort of turns to liquid, and then it can rise up. So this happened in certain streets in Christchurch, especially where they built on a swamp. It didn't end terribly well. And so especially if you have an earthquake and the sewer pipes and water pipes break.
Oh, and that adds to the water.
That's major. So that adds an enormous amount of water to the thing. You've still got these aftershocks. And then as it shakes, all of this stuff comes up through the drains and the sewer, and the cracks in the ground as well.
Ooh.
And they ended up with like 30 centimetres of mud.
I remember that there was silt, sort of like a covered.
And it's infected. It's contaminated with sewage. It's got all sorts of, especially if you're living in town, it's got all sorts of dangerous things that have been flown around.
So earthquakes are sudden, but again, when we talk about preparation, we can talk about those sort of grab bags and various things, but we won't talk now about that. And then the one thing we didn't mention was fire. Now, New Zealand doesn't have as much as Australia with these, you know, bushfires.
Yeah.
And you get it also in South Africa because the you know, bush and stuff dries out, and often there's oil in there.
So is yours as explosive, your bush in South Africa, explosive as in Australia?
Or? Yes, it comes usually at the end of summer or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing about those veld fires often, especially in the Western Cape, the fauna needs fire to set its seeds again.
Mm.
But it looks terrible. I mean, you just see a whole blackened area, and then within about a year, it's growing again.
Yes.
But so, yes, so fire, earthquake, flooding. Flooding is often a result of other things like cyclone or heavy rains or burst whatever.
Yes, yep, burst pipes.
Yep.
Block drains are a big one as well. The slash issue that we have in New Zealand with our pine forests.
Yes, to talk a bit more about what slash means to someone who might not understand.
So when they have forestry, we have a lot of forestry in New Zealand. This is now native bush so much, but it's more pine trees, so it's a monoculture. And then when the companies that are harvesting the trees come through, they'll cut all the little branches off and they tend to leave them in big piles. They used to burn them, but they don't do that anymore, because one of our governments decided that it was better just to leave them providing natural habitat for things and compost down bits and pieces. Unfortunately, a lot of these forests are built on marginal land, which is very steep. It's got big gullies. So now, when it rains, with the increased rainfall that we have and big downpours, you end up with a lot of this, what they call slash, which is the resulting little tiny sticks.
Yeah.
Well, actually, they can be quite big sticks. Get washed into the gullies, and then they can form a kind of dam sort of sitting in there. And then they suddenly let loose, and a huge amount of water and sticks and mud.
And which is so dangerous, because if that crosses someone's field, they take the fence out.
They take the houses out.
They take houses out.
Around houses.
And they end up on the beach.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Or if they get that far.
Yeah, they do. There's, I mean, there's a few things that they can do this. That we had a big willow planting exercise back in the 80s along our rivers to stabilise the banks, to stop runoff from farms and nitrogen going into the rivers and things. And then, funny that they decided that they planted the wrong willow. They planted a lot of crack willow, which when it kind of snapped and then replanted itself further down in the stream, was often causing a lot of issues with erosion and doing all sorts of things. So councils came along and poisoned them all. But when you do that, if you don't cut them down, eventually they all just
fall down
at a certain time all together, end up in the river, big flood comes, and you end up with a different sort of slash you now have,
yeah.
You know, on these big slow-moving rivers that ends up on your beaches. And
but, you know, this is often what people take an immediate sort of, we got an answer for this.
Without thinking about the consequences.
And they don't realise, the classic one, we lived in a town called Paul, which is a grape-growing, wine-growing area. But anyway, they had planted pine trees on the mountain above, because it's a big mountain, the mountains around it. And along came the environmentalists and said, no, these are not indigenous trees, we must cut them down. And, of course, the good old people who were cutting down needed tea, you see, so they made a little fire to warm their water. Now, you know what happens after that?
Oh, dear.
Well, it all caught alight. And the top few roads of the town had thatched-roofed houses. Quite a few houses burnt down. We were a couple of blocks lower, but animals started to appear. We ended up with a very large, with big spikes, not a hedgehog, a porcupine running around the garden. Very interesting animal. You can't touch the thing.
No.
You get spiked. Anyway, yes. That subsided. So, okay, so the year goes by, then the rains come. And, of course, there's nothing to hold the soil.
Oh.
And so the sand roars down the hill, blocks all the drains, and there's a flood in the town.
Yeah.
These are the untold consequences of taking a quick fix.
Yep, that's right.
Without thinking through what happened.
It's a lot that happens in our forestry as well.
Mm.
About anywhere between 15 and 30 years after you've cut down a forestry block, the big roots that were in the soil degrade and they rot out. And then the water from the rain uses those channels through the soil as a way through. And then all of a sudden your slope can become incredibly unstable.
Okay.
So you find that where the forestry was holding the soil together,
yes.
After a certain time, all of a sudden it starts to subside and you get really big slips.
Which is something we haven't actually mentioned. Does it happen in other countries? Because I'm amazed at how many slips occur in this country. You know, whenever we have a huge storm or anything, some poor old outlying town is cut off because half the road slipped away.
A lot of where we put our roads, we tend to put our roads along the side of a hill, at the base of a hill, alongside a river. So we are quite unstable as a thing. I mean,
That's
geographical. If you get the rather unfortunate combination of a cyclone and then you get an earthquake, so you get a huge amount of rain, and then you get an earthquake, and that's a bit devastating because you can have a massive amount of soil coming down in slips because it's very unstable.
Yeah.
So a lot of it happens with timing. Our roads are very, we are extremely vulnerable to being cut off.
Yeah, I know, I find that amazing. Yeah. I know, and it does relate to costs and size of population and a whole lot of things like that, you know. In America, we just cut a huge sway through something, you know, because they've got the money and the things and so on. But it is difficult. But the reality is it has major impacts for crises.
Well, I wonder if it's a lot of our, we have a lot of coastline, huge amount of coastline, because we're quite a long, thin little country and two islands. And so we've got a lot of beach communities. A lot of our beaches are rather lovely.
Yes.
And so a lot of people want to live there. They retire to the beaches. They have these little communities and things. So we've got a huge amount of roads in New Zealand. And every little road leads to a beach.
Yeah.
And I think that causes, possibly that's the issue, whereas Australia has a lot less roads.
Yeah.
And their land is older.
Yeah.
As well. So the hills are rounder and shallower.
Okay.
Our hills, we're a very young country geographically.
Yeah.
So we've been pushed up through volcanoes and earthquakes and those tectonic plates hitting each other and rising up. So we're still in that erosion phase.
Yes.
So when we start whacking a working a road through the side of a hill, it's very unstable.
Yeah.
And I think that causes a few issues.
So each, you know, land throughout, each country throughout the world has specific crises type things they have to face. So I mentioned fire, but that's more an Australian or a dry country.
Well, my sister lives in Tasmania.
Yeah.
And they tend to catch on fire fairly regularly. It's getting worse with climate change. Yeah. Australia used to feel as though Tasmania was a very safe place to go to, and you could just pick up most Australian bungalow in Tasmania. There's only 500,000 people living there, but in reality, it's getting worse. You know, the bushfires are getting more and more prevalent.
Yeah.
My sister had a major one, must have been about a year ago, where she and her children were out there because her husband was away at sea, big fire came through. The police turn up and they say, right, we're going to give you, pack your car up, put all your animals in the car, all your photo albums, all your precious things, get everybody ready to go. We'll give you a 20-minute warning. We don't know which way the wind's going, but it looks as though it's going to come and take out your house, your whole property. Up until then, you've got the right to defend. So they got out there, which is a thing in Australia. You have the right to stay and defend, which means that the police aren't going to drag you out of your house anymore.
Okay.
They say, we waste far too much time dragging reluctant people away from defending the house. So we will tell you to evacuate. If you're not going to evacuate, up to you.
Yeah.
So you block your gutters off, fill them up full of water, and you organise yourself, because otherwise the firebomb's coming. And then she and the kids were out there for 12 hours all through the night with mops and buckets of water, whacking these big firebombs that come through. The fire was a kilometre away when these trees
explode. But fires jump.
What actually happens in Australia is when the gum trees, it gets so hot that these gum trees explode and these big balls of flaming gas and come in like big meteors. Think of a trebuchet throwing these big things in, and they land and then they catch whatever they landed on fire.
Yeah.
So as these things come in, if you can sidestep them, then you're whacking them with a mop to put them out. And she did that.
How horrendous.
All night. And then the fire shifted.
And it moves on. Yeah. And that's, again, you don't know where it's going.
No, I've got no idea.
Now, with this lovely, happy ending, we're going to end this particular program. And in our next program, we'll talk about some of the ways we can mitigate some of the big physical things. And then we're going to get on to how do we build our own resilience and look future. Mm. But there are immediate things one can do.
Yes, all right. Absolutely.
Thanks very much. Thanks for that. Now I'm in a twitch. Now I'm in the panic mode.